Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics. Hi, I'm DJ McGuire from Virginia, self-described economic conservative and self-confessed Republican for the moment.
Hi, I'm Greg Matuszak. I'm your liberal Democrat from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I am Jonah Knight. I'm an independent from Blue, Maryland.
I'm Emily Brewer. I'm a moderate Republican from Virginia.
And I'm Kevin Kelton. I live in Los Angeles, and I'm a moderate Democrat, or so I believe.
And you can find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com, which includes blogs and commentary. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And, of course, please rate and review us on iTunes. We begin with the Grand Circular Firing Squad. Excuse me, the effort to stop Donald Trump from winning the Republican nomination. A story in the New York Times over the weekend talked about how the firing squad, this group of Republicans, is attempting to do anything to either stop Trump from getting 1,237 delegates, or, if he actually gets that, find a backup plan to stop him from getting 270 electoral votes. Strangely enough, I think anything besides a meteor crashing in the Northeast will pretty much stop Trump from getting 270 electoral votes, but your mileage may vary. With that, I'm curious to see what folks outside of the party think of this grand fiasco. So, Kevin, I'll throw it to you. What's your take on all this?
I don't think he could get 270 electoral votes if we lost the Northeast. I think he wouldn't get it if he just had the South. My take on the whole thing is this. I'm going to actually broaden it to talk about both parties for a moment. There have been a lot of people this week who've been saying that this party or that party is subverting the will of the people. Everybody's so upset that there are power brokers out there that want to subvert the will of the people. As I understand it, more people have voted for Hillary Clinton and more people have voted against Donald Trump than anything else.
So how is
supporting that subverting the will of the people?
Because nowhere on the ballot box is there an against button or an against. It says, who are you voting for? Okay? And at the end of the day, you vote for a candidate. Now, you may vote for a candidate, and you may walk out and say, you know what, I didn't like Trump, so I voted for a different candidate. But at the end of the day, the person with the most votes is supposed to win. And that's naive. That's Pollyanna.
No, but it's not. And I'll bet you that my friends on the Republican side agree with me on this. In fact, I think you're all going to agree with me.
Probably.
This is not, you know, and this has been said by a lot smarter people than me this week. Neither of these parties is their process itself small d democratic. It is an organization that makes its own rules. These are not democratic elections. The primaries are democratic elections. But nominating a candidate goes by party rules. And the rule is you have to have 50% plus one. There is no prize for coming in with the most plurality of delegates.
Right. And this is and you're exactly right, Kevin. And this is actually one of the problems that we have in that we are a presidential system rather than a parliamentary system. In parliamentary systems, nobody wins unless somebody cobbles together 50% plus one. It doesn't matter how well you did. It doesn't matter how poorly anybody else did. 50% plus one is the rule. In Britain, they talk about elections that nobody wins. They call them hung parliaments. Now, the only place where coming in first is considered having won is, to some extent, and it's only been very recently, in Canada, and in part that's because of their influence of watching us for so long, and that they'll let somebody who comes in first place have a minority government for about 6 months to a year, and maybe they'll be able to trot her forward. But the notion that 40% is just as legitimate a mandate as 50% plus one, that does not make sense anywhere on earth, and it, in fact, doesn't make sense in this country either, because in the general election, if you don't get to 270 electoral votes, it doesn't matter if you come first in the popular vote, as Al Gore learned. It matters that you get a majority of what's elected.
Nor does it matter if you have the most electoral votes if you don't get to 270. At that point, the Congress can do whatever it wants. And one more analogy I'd like to make. We have many primaries and also actually mayoral elections in this country where they have a runoff if one person doesn't get to 50%.
Indeed.
So I see this as no different.
Yeah. So what was fascinating for me, the reason why I think this article is of particular note, is because it is actually detailing the specific strategy that this secret cabal of Republican leaders is taking to derail Trump. Because we've been hearing for a long time on TV and in op-eds and all this, and sometimes elected officials and party leaders, we have to stop him, we might do this, we might do this. Well, this is the beginnings of us seeing some kind of details on what that plan is. And what I find fascinating about it is that it's a multi-tiered plan. And that they're not just saying, well, we're just going to do this. They're like, we're going to work on this, and we're going to work on this, and we're going to work on this all together in case one of them doesn't work.
Which pretty much guarantees that none of them will work.
You know what's so funny is, like, you know, I hear what you guys are saying. Almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. We get it. But, you know, what's so funny is from state to state, we see, you know, these guys saying, oh, I came in second. Well, you know, in some states, it really doesn't matter. Someone took all the delegates. It is what it is. But I think this is going to get very, very interesting, especially, you know, the Republican Party has trotted out Mitt Romney, and he's going to be, you know, our Jesus Christ superstar or some, you know, diluted concept there. So he goes to Ohio, stumps for Kasich. Oh, yeah, best man ever. Awesome. Love this guy. Utah, vote for Cruz. I think he's amazing. So, you know, obviously, I think they're just, you know, picking and choosing, and just like DJ says, firing squad all day. But I'm going to give the troll award to Kasich because he's running ads right now in Utah featuring Mitt Romney saying he's, like, the best guy in America and he's amazing. So, you know, troll award goes to him.
Okay, here's one aspect about the article. If I was a Trump supporter, or even if I was on the fence of being a Trump supporter, okay, and by the way, I know several Trump supporters. They're fascinating to talk to. Their big issue is, it's these guys in the government, and it's these guys who are these cabals. By the way, favorite word of the day.
Cabal.
Cabal, who are keeping us down, and it's really these outsiders that need to. And this article, and these plans, and the fact that they're saying, we're keeping him out, is just the sort of thing that's going to rile me up, and it's just the sort of stuff that's going to make me want to take a wildlife preserve over and vote for Donald Trump and do all this kind of, you know, crazy shit. That's two crazy things right there. I just said it. And that's it. I mean, that they actually say, we're going to do this, that would make me, anyone who was on the edge of, you know, doing something stupid like voting for Donald Trump, push them right over. It is a conspiracy, and they are saying it. You know?
And it is, but it's a public conspiracy, and that's what makes it different.
Yeah. Well, and it's a Democratic conspiracy with a big D.
And
what I find interesting, and I think we're whistling past the graveyard on this one, the real message, because we've all heard this, that part of the multi-tier strategy is to possibly run a third-party candidate or support independent Gary Johnson in the fall. We're talking about Republicans now who are talking about doing this.
Well, that's my
option.
What
that says is they dislike Donald Trump so much that they already, they, you know, he has about a 30 to 40% chance of winning, you know, in any given November election. You always have a chance. Something could go wrong on the other side. They don't even want to take that chance that he could become president of the United States. They would rather lose the presidency than win the presidency with Donald Trump.
Well, I think it's a couple things. First, the Hillary Clinton has been the favorite, has been the general election favorite for so very long that I think a lot of folks who are active in politics have sort of priced in a first Hillary Clinton term. And they're thinking, you know, the notion that Donald Trump could beat Hillary Clinton is a little strange when he's trailing her in Utah as we speak. But the fact that I think it's something that people are just so used to the idea that, you know, blowing up a Trump candidacy is not all that big a deal for them because they don't really think, yes, everybody has a shot at winning these things, but that's not the way you bet. So I think the bigger issue here is, and the problem I think that these folks have, is that they're not saying what is really bothering them, which is that Donald Trump would move the Republican Party in a direction that they don't want to go. They have serious political disagreements with him on immigration, on trade, and those are really the only two issues that Trump really talks about. But for whatever reason, they frankly are too timid to go after him on genuine open disagreements of policy. The only one I've seen do it is actually Ted Cruz, who did go after Trump on free trade during the last debate. Now, full disclosure, with Rubio out of the race, I have sort of shifted to Cruz. But Cruz...
No!
Yes, I have. Sorry, John.
No!
But Cruz... But that was Greg. Sorry. I know John's pissed, too.
Wait. I'm just wondering. Podcast.
Hang on.
I've just got to know. Is DJ going to send me, like, a chastity belt in the mail? Like, he's a Ted Cruz supporter. I think after a donation, that's what they send you.
I think so.
No, they don't.
They send you a hair shirt?
I have not donated. And to be fair, the strategy that Cruz came up with when they realized that ethanol was going to hurt him in Iowa, and he figured, okay, I'll go as the forebearer of the Third Great Awakening. That may have worked in Iowa, but that's hurt him everywhere else. But the simple fact of the matter is, Cruz is the only one who has actually gone after Trump on an issue that Trump has put forward. Everyone else has gone after him on character, and it hasn't worked. They've gone after him personally, and that hasn't worked. And now these people who are all gathering together like this are basically saying, well, we're just going to stop him, but they won't say why. And that's why I think this will continue to fail, because no one, with that one exception, is willing to say, I do not want Trump running the country because what he promises to do is bad for the country. I haven't heard anyone actually say that. They say Trump himself will be bad for the country, but they won't say what Trump will do is bad for the country. That's a mistake. And that's why I don't think this is going to work.
So I had Anonymous did their thing this week, and they put out information that was already public knowledge, and I guess they did it for whatever reason. But because of that, I started thinking down this line, like what you're saying, DJ, about if you really believe that Donald Trump is some kind of Hitler, and we talked about that, and that's not the right analogy. But if we really believe that he's this horrible world-ending, end-of-days bringer, then what is our responsibility to really stop him by any means, right? And I think that this is what the GOP establishment is wrestling with, right? And it's why there is such turmoil. Because there is this mix of, well, he can't be that bad. He can't actually destroy the world, can he? And then there's a large chunk of people that believe, I think he could destroy the world. And I think we're kind of, it's a weird mix that we're in right now, because we're like, well, maybe if I release his Social Security number, that'll stop him. You know, it's like, it's a weird position that the anti-Trump people, and I think we're all anti-Trump people to one extent or another, we find ourselves in a weird position. Like, what actually is our responsibility if we again, I guess it's just how bad do we think he will screw things up? Maybe pretty bad.
Well, we all have we all may have a responsibility as American citizens, but we have different responsibilities. Emily and I, as Republicans, have responsibility to stop him getting the nomination for whatever reasons. And again, in my case, I have ideological reasons. I don't like what Trump says he wants to do. Democrats, such as Kevin and Greg, have general election responsibilities. Jonah, you've registered for the Maryland primary, and I don't think it's happened yet. So you can act within the primary and within the general election. You can act in both ways. And we all can, frankly. But, you know, different depending upon where you are politically, if stopping Trump is your paramount objective, there are different ways and different methods to do it. The bigger problem I have is, and you're right, Jonah, there's so many people in the establishment and outside the establishment of the party for whatever, who are saying, well, Trump can't be that bad. Well, Trump is a businessman, and well, Trump doesn't run me the wrong way. Cruz or Kasich does. Your mileage may vary, and you know it's just missing the point. The point is, if you want to stop someone from winning the nomination, you support a candidate that gives you reasons to vote for them, and Kasich and Cruz both do that. And then you also go after what, not who he is, but what he says he wants to do. and very few people in the party are willing to do that, and that's why Trump is winning.
Yeah, because it didn't really work. Like, when in those early debates, when it was, he's been married 3 times, and he kind of loves abortion, and Planned Parenthood is awesome, and everyone was like, yeah, but he's cool! And, like, and it didn't work. You know, it didn't work then, when it was right. on the
he's
issues.
He's tapped into that Tea Party anger, which is the Republican Party accepted. That was the deal they made. They accepted this angry, I'm going to use that word, sure, angry Tea Party, and it got them in, got them the Senate, it got them the House, got them everything. And the bad news was, it also got them Trump.
Yes, but the issues that got the Tea Party, the Tea Brewers, angry, and I know because I know many of them, at least locally here in Virginia, are not the issues that Trump is running on. And that's
doesn't
the
matter.
And well, that's the well, point.
A couple of them
well,
are,
right,
DJ.
But the Democratic Party. Are. Wait, let me finish this real quick. The Democratic Party did not welcome with open arms the Occupy Wall Street people. We didn't say, hey, come Good join point. Us, because we didn't. We for whatever reason we said. This is a whole hot bag of crazy we didn't want to touch, and we knew there would be damage with that. And where did they all go? Well, that's coming up later. But it the initials are B and S. How's that?
Maybe we should. Oh, okay. Maybe we should make that transition. Maybe we should be more responsible than 99.9% of the media and not spend our entire show talking about Donald Trump.
Fair enough.
You know what I've got to say, though, is we've got to stop trying to predicate our votes on what we think is going to happen, and we've got to be voting for people who we feel like chooses our best interests. And right. I think that's. The problem that so many voters are making is they'd rather make a protest vote and then do the research and the homework, and that's the problem with the American voter right now, is they're not doing their homework.
The people.
Well, that is a great point, and I think a great segue to talking about the other party, because...
Are you saying Democrats don't do their homework? Thank you, Kevin. I'm so glad you agree with us after all this time.
You know,
I think her next statement is going to be, water is wet.
we're all in agreement here, because a lot of them haven't. And in my opinion, the big divide in the Democratic Party, because... Clearly, and again, I think that my Republican friends here will agree with me, the actual ideological difference between Bernie and Hillary is not that vast.
No, I agree.
He is more of a liberal purist. He has his positions are further to the left, but they're both to the left on most of the major issues. But the big divide in the party is, do you vote for the person who brings out your passions and speaks to you as a liberal? Or do you vote for the most electable candidate? Now, there are people that feel that Bernie is the most electable candidate, and for them, life is simple. There are people that feel that Hillary has the better positions and is the better candidate. For me, life is simple. But for those people who are juggling between those two, frankly, I have to say I take exception to Emily's point about picking who you want to vote for and just voting for them. I think our job and the Republicans' job in the nominating process is also just as important, or maybe more important, to pick the person who can win for your party. And if you're voting for the most ideological, pure candidate who has no chance of winning, I don't think you're doing your party any good.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, electability is an unknown and dark beast that is very difficult to determine.
Right. We each have to make a subjective judgment.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now, the second thing is, if from my perspective, the Democratic Party and the Democratic contest, from looking at the outside, what has continually enabled Hillary to get blue water, if you will, between herself and Bernie Sanders has not been saying, I'm more electable, or I don't like his attitude or the things he says or his methodology. It's where she hits him on gun rights. It's where she hits him, or when she tried to hit him on the auto bailout, which he then flipped back around on the bank bailout. But she has hit him on gun rights just about every single chance she has gotten. She has, in my opinion, she has won, and I think she has won this nomination contest. Or, for those of you who don't think that, she will win, based on the issues, in particular that one issue where she saw that Bernie was out of step with the overwhelming majority of the Democratic Party, and she hit him on it over and over and over and over and over again. She won on issues. She beat him on issues. She popped the balloon, burst the bubble on issues. She did exactly what the Republicans going against Trump, for the most part, will not do, and it's why they're failing and why she has succeeded.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I'm living proof of what you just said is true, because although I came into this as a Hillary supporter to begin with, certainly her antagonistic approach to the NRA and her being to the left of Bernie on guns has helped me justify that I'm supporting the right candidate. So I'm agreeing with you, DJ.
Holy cow, we have agreement.
Oh my gosh.
Now,
shut everybody up.
I just out of curiosity. So, on the Democratic side, like, who feels like that Bernie is exercising futility here?
No. Oh, I do not.
No,
I do not
at all. Not
okay,
at
I'm just
all.
Asking. No, so, just to get my Dem friends' opinion.
No. So, Bernie has a plan. It's not like Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader was doing it, you know. Which, by the way, if I get 3 free punches in my life of anybody, 2 of them go to Mike Love of the Beach Boys. Long story, and 1 of them goes to Ralph Nader.
So would you be upset if I said that I voted for Nader?
Oh yeah.
Oh well, you remember that I'm the independent here, and
yeah,
I did cast my vote for Ralph Nader.
Maybe once you vote for him. Okay, I understand it. You were young. You were experimenting.
No,
you were
no.
Like, oh, I was in college.
I went to one of the super rallies, like, and I listened to Michael Moore give a speech in Washington, D.C. at the Nader
Rally. But the fact
rally.
That he kept doing it.
That's about the same mistake as buying a Nickelback CD.
Well, you know, I might not have gone if Nickelback had been there. We'll never know.
I assume you were like young. We all do things in college.
No,
like,
I was far out of college. This was 2000, right? Yeah,
he was trying to give you an out there, and you just blew
it. I was really like, hey, you know, I drank human blood in college because, you know, everyone was doing it. But hey,
it was between Nader.
Where's my popcorn? Damn it!
It was my vote was between Nader and Buchanan that year, if you remember, and so I couldn't have gone for Buchanan.
Wait, were you living in Florida?
No, I was.
Oh,
if only.
Hey, I voted for Howard Phillips that year.
Yeah, see, that was a good year. That's a good year for third parties. It's
oh,
been
my
downhill
gosh.
Since then.
Yeah, really.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll admit it. I voted for John Anderson in 1980.
Yeah.
Wow.
Come on, Greg, give us one.
I'm trying to think if I've ever voted for just completely out there. I'm pretty true blue, and anything to upset my father.
Emily, what about you?
I voted in a Democratic primary once. Everyone shoot me.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, that's fine.
I voted in a Democratic primary once. That's nothing.
Yeah.
There's no party registration in Virginia, so that's, you know, who hasn't?
Yeah.
But your question, Emily, about whether Bernie's campaign continuing is irrational or is should it even
in
be
your
happening?
Opinion? I mean, I have my personal opinion, but
so,
I wanted to kind of see how you guys feel.
So my thinking is that there is, and I've said this before, but there is a possibility that even if Trump is really far ahead, he'll explode. And there is a possibility that even though Hillary is really far ahead, she will explode. And I think that there should always be, like, I didn't begrudge Huckabee staying in to the end. Why not? You know, he wasn't going to win. He knew he wasn't going to win, but you never know. So I think there always should be a second person who kind of has some goodwill in a chunk of the party that stays in to the end, because you never know. So why not?
Right.
No, I agree, but it's the role that they play and how they go about it. Now, I think Sanders seems to have toned down the more snarky aspect of his attacks on her in the last week, although that might just be a perception because I haven't seen a lot of his rallies. But, you know, if he was still, you know, hammering her about why doesn't she release the speeches, you know, hammering her about the Goldman Sachs money, then he's actually hurting the party and he's not achieving anything. So it's really the way that you become the opposition or the protest candidate. I hope that he's made a transition personally to, you know, yes, take it all the way to June. I think the California Bernie Sanders voters have every right to have a chance to vote for their man. But don't continue to tear the party apart just for your Quixote-esque, you know, journey.
Right. Do you guys remember the Howard Dean had all these groups called Dean for America?
Yeah.
And then once he became DNC chair, they could no longer be called Dean for America. So they all changed their name to, they all had to pick different names locally. So, like, the local Cincinnati one was, like, Change for America or Progress for America or something like that. And they were all self-funded, but they would all donate to local progressive groups. And sometimes it was the Green Party. Most of the times it was the Democratic Party. They would meet, like, once or twice a month and decide where to volunteer. And they would have forums. And this lasted for years. This lasted for, I don't know, 4 or 5, 6 years afterwards. And it was very active. And very, like, you know, and this was his legacy after, because the Deaniacs were, like, so rabid over Howard Dean. And if he could transition, not the Bernie bros, I don't know what they call the Bernie people. I don't know.
Bernie bots.
Bernie bots, thank you. But that's more of an online thing. the Bernie peoples into something like that. I think he's got the groups, and that would be wonderful, you know, and I could see a real change for the, you know, for the progressive movement.
I just want to say, I don't want to spend too much time talking about Bernie, but I want to share one little anecdote. So, as I've mentioned every week, I'm in all these different political groups, and there's one guy who just turned on me as a friend because he is a rabid, rabid, rabid Bernie guy. And we just kept clashing to the point where we don't even speak anymore.
I'm sorry.
But out of curiosity, I every now and then go and check his Facebook page because I want to see where he is, because he hates Hillary Clinton beyond any rational, you know, level. I mean, he absolutely hates her. And so I went there this morning, and I'm scrolling down, and I find this letter that he wrote, that he actually wrote to his children, but it's on Facebook. And I'm telling you, this was like a suicide note. This was a cross between, you know, a Unabomber manifesto and a suicide note. This guy's life is crumbling because his candidate is not going to win. And there's hundreds of thousands, if not a few million, of these people out there. And it's just sad. I'm not talking about politics now. I'm talking about how people choose to live their lives.
Yeah.
It's just sad.
I'm seeing it from my friends also. The ones who are like, you don't know politics. You don't know how this works. And I'm like, I have a fair idea how this works. And
we're talking about people in their 30s, 40s, and into their 50s who cannot process this loss.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's much more visceral.
Was he
personal.
Involved in politics? Is this his first? Because no one gets over their first.
Well, it's not his first, but he's not involved the way, you know, Emily is and the way some of us have been in the past. I don't know that he's really run any campaigns or been deeply involved. He might have, you know, volunteered in one or two. And again, he's not a young guy. He's in his mid to late 30s, maybe even early 40s. And I know him to be a professional man, really smart, really funny, but he just dove in so deep on this that it has jaded his opinion of the world.
I stayed in bed 3 days after one election. I mean, I couldn't get out of bed.
Oh, my gosh. Did you use a heating pad in Midol, too?
No, it was bad.
Oh, my God. I've never done that, and I've lost twice.
No. I mean, it was Bush 2004. And we had a terrible candidate. But in the night before the election, I went and saw Bruce Springsteen with Carrie, and I was like, "We're gonna do this!" And I'd done everything. I'd spent like weeks for 80 hours, and I wasn't even on the Carrie campaign, but I was with all these other campaigns in Cincinnati and in state Supreme Court. And I'd been at all these rallies. I'd met Don Cheadle. I mean, I met Judge Joe Brown. I was so involved in all the campaigns. And when we lost big, I stayed in bed for days.
I think I voted for the Constitution Party that year.
I will admit, the worst I've ever done is probably like sat in the bottom of my shower and cried, and then drank a bottle of wine. Probably.
That was in 2012.
I shed some tears over. I shed some tears over a midterm election that I didn't see coming, and then 2 days later, I nearly cried again because I realized how stupid I was. But, you know, that happens. Honestly, Kevin, it sounds like this guy is just really funneling his midlife crisis into this campaign.
He's given up not only the hopes for his own existence, but his children's future. You know, this man has a baby that's maybe 5 months old, and he's, like, given up hope for this kid's future because he's invested so much of the potential of the universe in a man that he barely knew who he was 10 months ago. Yes, Democrats knew who Bernie Sanders was.
Oh, yeah.
But none of us were sitting around going, oh, gosh, if he would only run for president.
You know? I guess I will say, though, I have heard some stories of some people that are really just unraveling themselves about Trump. A friend of mine, her mom is 94 years old, and she's lucid. She's all together. She lives like an assisted living, and she's from Germany. She grew up with actually a Jewish family hiding in her attic the whole bit. And so, like, she gets up every day and turns on the TV and cries. And she's told me about this. And you know, she has a different life experience that I could never even begin to comprehend. So, obviously, it's very emotional for her. But I kind of get that a little bit more than whatever this guy's midlife crisis is.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, listen, why don't we talk a little bit about the guy who actually is in the Oval Office?
I was just going to say, he's actually having a much better week than the fellow Kevin's talking
about. He's having the best week ever.
In fact, I wouldn't go that far, but for the first time in a very long while, according to Gallup and maybe some other polling, I've just seen Gallup, the president's approval rating is over 50%, which is pretty much the lone lodestar that anybody needs on election day itself, which admittedly is 7.5 months away. But if you were to tell me at any point...
Are you saying Obama's going to become president again?
No, what I'm saying is that if Obama's approval rating is over 50% on election day 2016, the Democratic nominee, which I think is Hillary Clinton, is going to win. It doesn't matter who is running or how many of them are running. She is going to win if his approval rating is over 50%, which it is now. And I would say, I can't speak for Greg or Kevin or Jonah, but I think I can speak for Emily on this one, and I can speak for myself. I didn't think I would ever see the president's approval rating get over 50% again. This is a testament to the fact that events, dear boy, events, as Harold Macmillan once said way back in the 1950s, can affect everything about politics, and that a week is just a week is a very long time. The question is, if the president is in fact a net plus for the Democrats, this is the first time we've seen the president as a net plus for the incumbent party in about 20 years. Again, does that not really mean that all this discussion about Trump or non-Trump is really irrelevant if he can keep that approval rating that high?
Well, of course, it may not stay there, but I do think that it's a really important story because it speaks to the mood of the country. You know, if you're talking about everybody's angry, but yet somehow half the country approves of the president, there's a bifurcation there that I still don't think that our sociological minds are grasping. Everybody talks about, well, everyone's angry. That's why Donald Trump is doing so well. That's why Bernie Sanders strikes a chord. There's so much anger out there. But also the right track, wrong track, even though we're still in the red, 65 to 26 or something like that, a 39-point spread is really not bad for right track, wrong track, because in most administrations, people always think we're on the wrong track. Isn't that true, DJ, that it's very rare that Americans actually think we're on the right track?
I will freely admit I don't have the history on right track, wrong track polling. It's generally the presidential approval one that I pay more attention to. But I think your larger point is correct. What we are really seeing is we are seeing the angry Americans getting media attention, getting certain politicians' attention. But the angry Americans aren't winning. You know, Bernie Sanders this, Bernie Sanders that. Hillary Clinton keeps beating Bernie Sanders most of the time.
You know, right,
Donald,
right.
Donald Trump this, Donald Trump that. Donald Trump has never cracked 50% in a single state. Now, he may do that on Tuesday, in which case what I just said is out the window, but he still hasn't done it yet. Anger is getting everybody's attention, but anger is still not carrying the day, and this approval number shows that anger is not carrying the day.
Right.
So what role do you guys think Obama's sort of approval increasing here is due to the Supreme Court nominee still being blocked up when everybody pretty much says, hey, you know, this guy is the guy that we want, yeah, but it's politics, so we're not even going to do the hearing. Do we think that his approval rating's going up because of this?
Well, that's helping,
I think this
has nothing to do with it. Okay, it was trending upward before he announced the Garland thing, just so you know. But it certainly isn't hurting, because I think Garland was a popular choice. People don't know Merrick Garland, but, you know, he seems like a really good choice to those of us who just, you know, well, he was on, you know, the Ninth, not the, what is it, the Fifth District or the D.C. Court, that he's the
D.C., isn't it?
Yeah, DC.
I think it's the D.C. Circuit.
Yeah, the D.C. Circuit. He's the honcho there.
I think that's actually on his ropes on the back. It just says honcho.
Yeah, yeah.
I think honcho.
But clearly, I think Obama has once again boxed the Republicans into a no-win situation. And the talk this week that, hey, you know what? We're not going to give him a hearing, but oh, if Hillary Clinton wins the election, we think that we could actually rush him through in 35 days in November and December.
Oh, yeah, they
just
can.
Just shows the hypocrisy. I mean, Mitch McConnell is the most hypocritical man on the face of the planet.
Yeah, did you guys see Kasich
Oddly
this
enough,
morning?
Kevin, Ted Cruz agrees completely with you.
Did you guys see when something is true, it's true for everybody.
It's a universal. Kasich this morning on ABC said, you know, I really like Merrick Garland. I don't understand why people aren't talking to him. I like this unity thing, and I think we should sit down and talk to him. And the I'm trying to remember who it was that was interviewing him, said, just his jaw dropped, and he said, so you suggest talking to him? He goes, oh, I think we should talk to every, you know, his John Kasich, I'm a guy. So he's doing his John Kasich thing. He goes, I think we should talk to everybody, find the best solution, and talk to him. Yeah, let's talk to him and give him a nomination. Talking is what works. And as soon as the thing ends, about an hour later, there's this break, and it says, John Kasich says he did not understand the question. He walked back from it. It's not true. He said he was giving hypotheticals if he was the president. And it was like, oh, this is such crap.
Isn't it remarkable how in the United States of America, one of the most technically advanced countries in the world, every piece of equipment seems to break down on Sunday morning?
Oh, I know.
It's the truth.
So yeah, that's my Merrick Garland. I can't stand Kasich. Point for the day.
I hooked you up last week.
You did. I appreciate that.
What does everybody think about the Obamas vacationing in Cuba?
Spring break, baby.
Yeah. Cuba Libres for everyone.
So I'm all right with this.
Emily has a Cuba Libre story that she's going to tell us soon.
I drink hard liquor.
I don't want to say that I bought my Che Guevara shirt, but I have one. So, you know, I'm all right. Whatever.
You probably wore it to your Ralph Nader.
It was a wild time in college, I got to tell you.
Here's a thing that I can't get over. I have been in favor of opening relations with Cuba since Obama brought it up. So I'm going to be a hypocrite here for a moment. I'm glad he did it. I'm glad he's there. But there's a part of me that just goes, you know, there's still a 25% chance that Castro had Kennedy killed. And there's something that, if that's true, it really bothers me that we're celebrating the Castro brothers.
There are hundreds, if not thousands, of imprisoned dissidents in political prisons all throughout that island.
I was just going to say that.
Who will be now further harshly treated because the president, certainly after the president leaves. This is essentially part of the great dream of many left-wing Democrats, and whether Kevin and Greg are included on that is up to them, not to me, for whom the rehabilitation of this regime has been their top priority, and they don't care how much the Cuban people suffer in the process. This is a terrible mistake. This is part of a horrifically mistaken policy. If you want to complain about the policy...
Hang on, I'm not finished yet. Finish your thing. You can tell me
that the last 50 years have had flaws, and I'll agree with you. There have been problems with it. But the very notion that the only alternative to the attempted partial isolation of the regime is this sort of sappy, syrupy-like engagement that completely ignores the dissidents or damns them with faint praise is completely ridiculous. It is thoroughly wrong, and the president is completely in the wrong to do this. Period. End of paragraph. Last page in the book.
So if Obama stood at the tip of Florida and screamed, Mr. Castro, tear down your wall.
Tear down this ocean.
Everyone would freak out because we're sending them coke and free trade, and thus the fall of the Berlin Wall. Oh, wait, no, it's Cuba, because free trade and whatnot will reform an entire country. Yet, no, wait, a continent. And all we're talking about is this small thing. The Castro brothers will be dead in, I don't know, maybe mourning, because they are older than dust.
Excuse me. Did free trade reform communist China? No, it did not. Did anything resulting free trade from the lifting of the embargo with the Soviet Union actually reform the Soviet Union? No, it did not. It was our support for dissidents in Eastern Europe. It was our determination to tell the Soviets that they would not be able to expand their horrible tyrannies anywhere on the planet that did it. We don't have to do that last part with Cuba, but we should certainly be far more interactive with the dissidents and the resistance groups on that island than we are now. We weren't doing it before this president was in office, and that was unfortunate. That this president refuses to do that is even more unfortunate.
You know, I just want to go back to China for a second. You know, everything you said may be true, but did you see the end of The Martian? Come on, DJ. They helped save our Martian.
The Cubans? Oh, the Chinese.
The Chinese.
I was like, I don't think the Cubans did that.
I mean, these are big issues, I think. And there are no perfect solutions for any of them. But
We have no idea the extent of the human rights violations, because they won't even allow access to their prisons for us to even begin to document. I'm just saying.
Every single report of brutality out of a communist regime has actually been found to be too nice than what was actually happening over there. That brutality is real. Don't you dare dismiss it.
If history has shown us anything, it's that waiting for dictators to die is not a foreign policy. That is not how countries make the transition to democracy. You open up dialogue. You open up avenues of common accord. We did that with the Russians, who were our mortal enemies in the late 50s and early 60s.
That led to the Soviet expansion of the 1970s in Southeast Asia, in Africa, and in Central America. The détente of the 50s, to the extent that it existed at all,
the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Okay, never mind. You are living in a parallel universe that is nothing to do with reality.
And the weather's nice. I tell you, the democratic reality is wonderful. We have pancakes every Wednesday.
Now, speaking of... I'm just trying not to have a fight with DJ. So, with that in mind, we're not going to agree on Obama and the Cubans and the end of the Martian, but what about looking at the primaries to come this week, in one in Arizona, and then caucuses in Idaho and Utah, and then lots of caucuses beyond that.
New York is coming up.
New York is going to be big.
That's a winner take all. Trump takes all.
It's proportional on the Republican side.
Oh, I thought it was.
There's a 20% cutoff. So if you get under 20%, you get nothing. And it may be winner take all if Trump gets, if anybody gets 50% plus one. I'd assume the only one who have a shot at that would be Trump, being it's its own state.
I think he's at 60% in the last poll, or 66% in the last poll.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's crushing it.
That may very well be. But as for Arizona and Utah, which are the Republican ones, frankly, I've stopped paying attention to the Democratic ones. I think Clinton's going to take it from here on out. But I think I would actually say I'm going to go out on a limb, which I've done before and I've been thoroughly wrong, but I'm going to actually predict a Cruz upset in Arizona. And I think he's also going to win in Utah. These are two Western states. Mm. I don't think Mitt Romney actually helped. Mitt Romney has now succeeded in pissing off every Republican in the country. Good for him. But I think Cruz actually wins both.
Yeah, but Trump has Sheriff Joe.
Sheriff Joe.
Sheriff
yeah,
Joe?
He's going to take Arizona.
I'm
on the
pretty sure
of
Jonah
Joe.
Voted for Sheriff Joe also.
It was a write-in. It was a write-in. Comptroller. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yep. Sheriff Joe, crazy lunatic that he is, I'm pretty sure has some juice in that state. So I'm going to say he's going to win that. Wisconsin, according to the article, that's going to be like, oh, that's where we're going. That's our Waterloo.
For who?
Exactly.
For the Republicans stopping Trump.
Exactly.
It's all Wisconsin, baby.
But you know what? And he's down right now in the polls, but they haven't had a poll since, I don't know, December?
Wisconsin's a lot like Minnesota in that regard, you know? Yeah. Like, they don't suffer fools. Well, I guess I shouldn't go that far.
I was going to say.
elected Jesse Ventura as governor doesn't suffer fools. Okay.
That's Minnesota.
Yeah.
I've got to say, big supporter of Jesse Ventura for governor.
You probably voted for him, too.
I wish I could have. I didn't live there.
All right. Before this goes completely out of control, I've made my predictions. Kevin, let's hear yours.
You know, I there's no prediction in the near term that's going to be of interest to anyone, so I'm going to make a ridiculously long-term prediction, which is in the fall when Donald Trump is running against Hillary Clinton, they're going to have a series of three or four debates scheduled. He's going to do the first one, then he's going to drop out again, and his reasoning is going to be, I cannot stand to be on the same stage with her. I cannot stand to be in the same room with her. I can't guarantee it. I predict that will happen in the fall.
Okay. Jonah?
So I think that Ted Cruz is probably going to do Utah. I don't have a sense of upsets, although I wouldn't surprise... You know, Idaho's a caucus, so he seems strong there. I don't see Sanders winning any of these. My brother used to live in Arizona, and there is kind of like a fringe left population out there in the desert. So maybe... But I think Clinton wins them.
She wins Arizona. He has a shot, I think, at Idaho. Is that right?
Is caucus? Yes, Greg? Yeah.
Yeah, the Democrats of Idaho. I think.
And then he's
going to
win Wisconsin probably, and Hawaii he's going to win. Alaska he's going to win. So he's going to rack up a couple of small state caucus wins going into New York, and then she's going to decimate him in New York. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, and before I go to Greg, I should note that if Ted Cruz actually does the entire state of Utah, it really gets in the way of that Third Great Awakening campaign strategy. Greg, go.
Good. I think, you know, it's funny. No one has mentioned Kasich at all.
Oh, God.
And you know what? I won't either.
Pennsylvania, man. Pennsylvania.
Oh, you know, because Pennsylvania, they're just like his dad. His dad was a mailman, so he knows what it's like.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I've never heard that one before. Trump's going to win Arizona, Cruz, Utah. North Dakota will go to Cruz. Wisconsin will actually go to Trump, and so on and so on. They'll go piggyback back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I think Hillary will win it, but it's not going to be as nice as we think. It'll be ugly. It'll be bloody and ugly. And Kasich will stay there because, you know, he'll have a meme eventually that will say, I won a primary. Can I has presidency? And that will be it.
And we wrap up.
All right. I think that Cruz is probably going to win Utah. I think that... going to be very interesting. I'm going to give Bernie one state. I'm not sure which one yet, but somehow the man, he's got, you know, a rabbit's foot in his pocket. I think he's got a shot to win at least one.
Washington and Oregon, they legalized pot there.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Coming up in another week, yes.
No, not at all, but I think things are going to get really, really interesting and dicey, and I think that Cruz is really going to gain some serious momentum.
Hmm.
And there with that, that wraps up our podcast for this week. Stay tuned for next week, where we'll also talk about Vesta and Ceres going after each other in the Sweet Meter of Death primary. Bye-bye!
Good night!